that I want to speak about today, and one of them is just somewhat cool. The other thing is really, really cool. It's one of those things that I haven't spoken about in a long, long time. It really gets into the heart of the matter. So here we go. Parsha Shoftim. Okay, it's the first thing we're going to get into is Yud Zayin Gimel. Parsha Yud Zayin Pasuk Gimel. It says in the middle of it, it says, "Vayelech Vayavud Elohim Achirim Vayishapu Lahem." You're going to go and you're going to serve other gods and you're going to bow down to them. V'Hashemesh Leyareach, to the sun, to the moon, V'Lechol Tzva Shemayim Esher Lo Tzivisi, to all the heavenly hosts that I never commanded, you know, that I never got involved with, that I never told you to do that. So when the Septuagint was made by at the behest of Ptolemy and by the 72 Zakenim, when they had made the Septuagint, they translated the different parts of the Torah. 72 Zakenim wrote it in different rooms, and we all know that, right? They all wrote it in different areas. Each one of the Zakenim translated the Torah according to what he thought was right, and they all switched certain words because they understood that the way it was written, it's going to sound really bad if you write it in certain ways. I guess if you translate it into English, or then it was Greek, you translate it in certain language, it was going to sound very bad. So they took those things and they translated it loosely in order so that it wouldn't appear questionable to those people who are looking at it with foreign eyes. So one of them is right here. It says over here, to the sun or the moon or all the hosts of the heavens, Asher Lotzi Visi. Sounds like that I never commanded them to be, and yet they're here. Sounds like they do have a power on their own. That the sun, the moon, and the stars, I never told them to be around, and look what they're doing. The sun and the moon and the stars are really, really powerful. So the Gemara says in Megillah that they added on the word Asher Lotzi Visi lit of dumb. I never commanded them to, I never commanded you to serve them. And Rashi brings it down over here. I never told you to serve those types of things. So therefore that you add on that one word and it already makes sense. You know, so I commanded the sun and the moon and the stars to exist, but I never told you to serve them as a bodhisattva. That's the idea behind it. But what does that mean exactly? What's the actual pasuk trying to say when it says Asher Lo Tzivisi? What are we getting at with the words Asher Lo Tzivisi? Here we go. Perek Dalet, pasuk Yudtes, and Parshas Vaschana. The pasuk says the following. Dalet Yudtes. It says the following. Pen tisol einecha shamayma. Maybe your eyes will go up to the heavens. V'ra'isat ha-shemesh v'ziyarech v'zikochavim. You're going to see the sun, the moon, and the stars. Kol tzva shalayim, all the hosts of the heavens. V'nidachto. And you're going to be led astray. V'shtachavis v'lehem, and you'll bow down to them. V'abaratem, abaratom, and you'll serve them. Asher cholak ha-shem elokecha osam l'chol ha-amim tachas kol ha-shamayim. That God had given them to all the nations underneath the heavens. So it was given over to them. What does that mean? Rashi has two perushim. Sher cholak Hashem l'hayir lahem, to light up for them. Oh, that means just, you know, as a regular sun, moon, and stars would do, to light up for them. That's number one. Davar acher l'alohos. I gave it to the Goyim to be their gods. What in the world does Rashi mean by that? I wanted to bother the nations of the world to give them something that they'll mess up on, so they'll serve it as a bodhisattva, and that'll be their bodhisattva. That's for them. But you shouldn't get messed up with that bodhisattva. What in the world does that mean? Two perushim and Rashi. The first one is so obvious. Hashem gave it to them, in other words, to give light and to help them or whatever it was, so they serve it because it's, you know, they make mistakes. And the second one is God did it on purpose for them to make that mistake. How could that be? What does that mean exactly? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has an unbelievable answer for this. There's a huge machlokes between the Rishonim, whether or not Avodah Zarah is for real or it's all a big fake. The Rambam holds it isn't mamish at all. That Avodah Zarah has no koach. There's no strength to Avodah Zarah whatsoever. It's a waste of your time, no matter what you do, and you're over on a huge isser, and you're not getting anything out of it. That Avodah Zarah means absolutely nothing. The Rambam says it in many different places, mostly in Moe Neguchen, but he goes into this whole idea that Avodah Zarah is mamish nothing. The Ramban, on the other hand, argues that a Kadosh Baruch Hu put within nature the idea of a mashpia, where the sun, moon, and stars bring down some type of shefa, some type of, I don't even know how to call it in English, just the kokos that you have in this world, these sun, moon, stars, and all these different things in the world, bring it down into Olam Hazeh, and we have it in Olam Hazeh from those planets, from those stars, from all the things out there, from the moon. They're able to give us our kokos inside this world. However, it doesn't affect B'nai Yisrael. It does everything for the other nations of the world. It gives things to the other nations of the world. It gives them their shefa, all their parnasa, all the good things that they get come from the sun, moon, and the stars, again, through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu just uses them as a middleman. But there are middlemen by all other nations of the world. By us, it's Hashem directly giving us something. I'm sorry?
So they gain by worshiping the sun?
Oh, here's the idea. Here's the idea. So the Ramban says the power. You still, although they're giving them the kokos, you can't daven to them. Even those nations of the world, you're never allowed to daven to the sun, moon, and the stars. Even if the sun, moon, and the stars are giving them their strength wherever they go in this world, you still can't daven to them. You still can only daven to the one God, or one God that's in charge of them all. You can't just say, as a nation of the world, I know I'm getting all my strength from the sun, therefore I'll worship the sun. But that's their mistake. They think the sun's giving me all the kokos that I have, the sun's giving my plants, as well as this spiritual shefa that comes down from the sun, therefore I'll worship the sun as a god. To that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to daven to them, can't do anything, even though it definitely helps them. That's the Ramban's view. So again, the Rambam says they don't do anything at all. The Ramban says they do something, but you're still not allowed to serve them. Yeah?
Why is there such a disparity between the Rambam That's another
relationship.
I'm saying, clearly in the Torah, it talks about astrology. And
you're 100% right.
And Moshe and other things.
Yeah, I don't know enough about Morin Gukum to understand how the Rambam looks at the world. The Rambam does mention this in his parish, but he has a whole different outlook in how it works and how this whole thing goes. That it's, I don't exactly know how. I've never had a Rebbe in Morin Avuchim, so I have no idea how exactly you put parts of the Rambam together with one another. But this is the machlokes, what it's based on, whether or not Avodah Zarah works or Avodah Zarah doesn't work at all. Is it just trickery? That's the Rambam, or the Ramban says that it works, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making it happen, and based on that, you can understand something very simple.
Well, you have to say that for sure. I don't think anyone would ever say that they would have their own powers aside from Hashem.
The Ramban is the farthest you can go. Any further than that would be Avodah Zarah. But yeah, that's the Ramban. Just the question is how the Rambam works. But those are the two sides.
But as far as the Rambam, that contradicts lots of things in the Gemara about where
it does.
About,
and the Rambam does that. At, he does say that there are parts of the Gemara that are taken more as Ramazim rather than as Pashup Shat.
Why can't you just say that it's the same way as magic words, that God created that magic.
No, it's the exact same machlokas. This is the machlokas. The Rambam says that magic never exists. There's no such thing. It doesn't exist at all. It's all fakes. All fakes. It's all achiza seinayim, and that's it. There's no such thing. Well, the Ramban says, no, it's for real. No, it's for real. There's something there.
Ramban says that...
No, this is the main machlokas.
You know that the Ramah HaShefos, that the only way to kill them...
But the Rambam says... That's all a fake. That they're all faking it. That's the difference between them. That's the famous Rambam. The idea behind the Rambam. Says Rav Yaakov, those are the two Pshatim and Rashi. Asher cholak Hashem lahem, that God gave to them as the Goyim, says the first parish, lahayir lahem, to give them light. Because if you go after something that gives you light, I mean, why don't you worship this light bulb over here? Says the Rambam, it's ridiculous. They don't have any kokos, they don't have anything to them, you're not doing anything. They just gave you light, so you're a fool, and you followed them. That's a foolish thing to do. That's the first Pshat Rashi. The second Pshat Rashi is that he gave it to them as Elohos. Elohos doesn't mean as gods, it means as powers. Powers to give them what they need through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But they have the power to be able to give something, and that's the second pshat in Rashi. That's the idea that Rashi is trying to say. It's the second idea that Rashi is trying to give. And those two pshatim in Rashi is the Rambam versus the Ramban. That's the idea behind it. To go through this, that helps us understand a very strange pasuk by Yiftach. If you go through Yiftach, it's actually in the Haftorah of Parshas Chukas, where Yiftach speaks over to the Melech Bnei Ammon, the king of Ammon wants to fight Bnei Yisrael, and Yitzhak is made the shofet. He's appointed, he tells the Jews, I don't want to be your shofet, you won't listen to me. They tell him, we'll listen to you, please be in charge. Yitzhak sends a message to Ammon, and he says the following words. He says, Halo es asher yorishcha kamosh elokecha. That which kamosh, your God, gives to you, Oso tirosh, that's what you should inherit. That's kol asher horish Hashem Elokeinu mipaneinu, everything that Hashem gives us, oso mirosh, that's what we'll get. So the Abarbanel says, he's just joking around with him. He's like, yeah, you take what Kamosh gets, and we get what God gets. Because the Abarbanel had the same shita as the Rambam. The Ralbag says also, he's just joking around with him. It's just a joke. It doesn't mean anything, because Kamosh can't give you anything at all. But according to the Ramban, it's pashit. It's exactly as it's written. He's saying, Kemosh, that God that you follow, that's the kokos that you're getting, that's what you're given through Kemosh from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the idea. You can't serve Kemosh. That's Esther Gomer. It's, you have to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that's your medium. I'm sorry?
Is Kemosh a natural entity?
He doesn't say. But you'd have to say that it's...
like an idol statue that they build.
You'd have to say it's based on some type of star or moon or whatever, something like that. And that's what he's trying to say. Well, according to the Ramban would say that he's saying it for real. He's saying Kemosh gave it to you through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, God gave us everything else. And that's the difference between us, that you have a middleman while we go straight from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the idea that he was trying to say to him. That also explains the Lashon of Tzav. Tzav does not always mean a Lashon of command. It also means a Lashon of putting in charge. For example, Vitzivisa oso le'enehem. It doesn't mean command Yoshua in front of their eyes. It means appoint him in front of their eyes. It means appoint Yoshua as the leader in front of all the Jews. Tzav et Yoshua. Vechazkehu v'amseyu. Appoint Yoshua as the leader and put him in charge. Now let's look back at this pasuk. The pasuk says in Gimel, Vayelech vayavar lohim acherim. He went and he served other idols. Vayishtapu lehem. V'lashemesh le'rat to the sun or the moon. L'chol tzvah shamayim. Asher lo tzivisi. That I never appointed as a leader for you. I might have appointed them as leaders for them, for the non-Jews of the world, but I never appointed them as a leader for you. That's the way to be able to read the pasuk, the word tzav, not as commanded, but as a leader. And in order to make sure that they understood that, we write, Asher lo tzivisi le'avdom. I never commanded you to serve them, because they're not real leaders. They don't really have that leadership quality. It's me that's behind everything, and that's the idea behind it. And that's the whole idea behind it, and this was what they were confused about. For the Septuagint, where they're giving it over to the other nations of the world, and they feel that they have power, then it looks like, oh my gosh, they have power, and God never told them to have that power. So that we say, no, I never commanded you to serve them, and that's how you have to be able to read it. That's the concept behind it. Now, that's one thing at the beginning of the parsha. Egla Rufa. The first thing you've got to do is read through the psukim. I'm going to give you the psukim. Chof Aleph, from Aleph until Pes, until the end of the parsha. Here's what it says. Okay, it says, Ki imate chalal v'adamo, when you find a corpse in the ground, somebody who was killed, Hashem Elokecha nosim l'chol l'rishta, that God gave you to inherit. No fil basada, he fell in the field. This corpse is in the middle of the field. It says, lo no dami yikau. We don't know who killed this man. The yotz is a kenecha v'shoftecha. You're a kenim and you're a shoftim. This means Sanhedrin and the melech at the time, whoever it is, go out. Umadidu ela orem asher svivo sakhalal. They measure. They themselves, Sanhedrin, you have 70 to 80 year old men. And the king going around measuring, using measuring sticks to find the closest area, the closest city to this corpse. The Hayaira Kova Alachalal, the city that is closest to the corpse, Velachu Ziknayahirahi, the elders of that city go and take. Eglas Bakr, a female calf. Asher lo ubat that has never worked before. Asher lo mashcha ba'ol, that never pulled on a yoke. Ve'oridu ziknei ha'irah, he has the eglal nachal esan. The elders of that city take that female calf to the nachal esan. Nachal esan is known as a wadi, like a little area, like a valley without any water in it, that is harsh. Harsh land that cannot be planted, that cannot be used for anything else. Asher lo yavid bo, has never been worked in. Lo yizareh, has never been planted. Ve'orvu sham es ha'eglal banachal. And they hit the back of the neck of the calf there in that wadi. The nikshu akohanim b'nei Levi, the kohanim, the sons of Levi approach, kivom bachar Hashem elokecha l'shorso, those are the ones that God chose to serve, and levarach b'shem Hashem to bless God. Those are the guys who are in charge of everything. All fights and all play, everything that happens, they're in charge. All the elders of that city that are close to the corpse, they wash their hands, they take water and they pour their hands on top of the egla that was killed in that nachal. The Anav Amru, they call out and they say, Yadinu l'shaku at adam hazeh, our hands did not spill this blood, Veinenu l'ro, our eyes did not see it. Kapir l'amcha Yisrael, give forgiveness to your people Israel, Asher Padis Hashem, that Hashem is redeemed out of Mitzrayim. Thou titin dam noki bekarav amcha Yisrael, do not place innocent blood, or don't make us spill innocent blood amongst Bnei Yisrael. Meaning, kapir l'am adam, and it should be a kapara. The last pasuk, thou tzivara adam noki mikirbecha, you should get rid of all of the cleansed, the innocent blood from amongst you. Kisasa yasha bnei Hashem, you should do good things in the eyes of Hashem. Okay, first of all, Reb Chaim Kanievsky has a sefer. It's called Nachal Esan. I don't know if anybody here has seen this sefer. It's 300 pages all about Egla Rufa. All about Egla Rufa. He goes through all the different hakiras. Where do you measure it from? Let's say it was a non-Jew that was involved. Let's say there were other people involved. He goes through all the different hakiras, all the different things. You can get 300 pages. Egla Rufa is one of the strangest parshios in the entire Torah. Somebody gets killed. You bring out forget about Sanhedrin for a second. You bring out the king to measure the land to find out who the closest city was. And what do? They take out a female calf and they hit it in the back of the neck. What does this all mean? This is a strange, strange parsha. A very, very strange parsha. So what does it mean and what are we getting at? So the Mori Nebuchim, the Rambam Mori Nebuchim, in Gimel Mem, says the following. This is an easy way. The whole process is to find the murderer. You find out about such a crazy thing. All of Sanhedrin, and the king is coming out to the fields to go measure out the cities and everything. Everybody's like, what's the king doing? What's Sanhedrin doing? They start talking about it. They say, oh, somebody was killed. Who was killed? Oh, that guy. Wait a second, I saw him with that guy. There was another guy. Wasn't Shimon with him before? Let's go find where Shimon is. Let's go find out who that guy is. It'll get known. People will find out about it. And since usually the rotsach, the murderer, will live near the crime scene, eventually somebody is going to say something. Somebody will find out a few more details. And eventually they'll go ahead and they'll find the killer. So the Rambam says this very simple process. It was there to make noise. To make it well known by people so that people would start talking about it. And since the land can never be used again, the owner of that land, the guy who owns the land, will immediately get up and say, wait a second, I'm not going to use this land ever again. He'll start his own private investigation, says the Rambam. He'll find out everything he can because he doesn't want to have to lose this land for the rest of his life. He's not going to be able to use it anymore. So he calls out and he says, wait a second, I'll do everything I can. Give me a couple days to find out who the murderer is. So he does everything he can to be able to find the killer. That's the Rambam. But the Ramban, again,
why is it following the guy with the worst piece of land?
Unfortunately, that's part of the pasuk. So they have to find something. Yeah. Don't you feel bad for the guy already? I'm sure he has other lines that's tremendous.
Lots of miles because it's a bad package.
That's true. That's true. So don't feel bad.
So bad. It's just the tape that they put around the.
It should be the area where the eagle is, you know, where the eagle is. But let's say you don't own that much land. It's still going to be a lot of land for somebody. Somebody is losing out on something. But the Ramban argues. The Ramban argues that it'd be better to do this in a public arena then. What are you doing in the middle of nowhere where nobody lives and there's no plants being planted and everything? It's in the middle of nowhere. Not everybody's going to find out about it. Do it in City Hall. Get Sanhedrin and the king together in City Hall. Call all the people from all the cities together. Get everyone in one area. Do it by Aliyah Lerego, by Pesach, by Sukkot. Call everyone together and do it then if you want everybody to know about it, not in a strange marsh in the middle of nowhere. So he says, you know what, it's similar to Sirah Mishtaleach, where you send out that goat on Yom Kippur, send over to the Sultan, the Tziporim, the birds that were sent out by a Mitzorah. It's just something that's beyond our seichel, something that we don't really understand, but it's a chok, a law that we don't understand that's given over to the Sultan. Says the Ramban, that's it. That's all you can get from over here. The Ibn Ezra says, Machshavos Hashem, Amku V'Gavu Ve'en Kitz Etzleinu. I mean, the thoughts of what God is trying to do are so deep and so far away from anything that we can imagine. There's nothing we just have no idea what's going on over here. That's what the Ibn Ezra says. Rabbeinu Bachaya, Rabbeinu Bachaya gives a more pashut answer, and this is a good answer, but this doesn't get to the real stuff yet. We take the egla that has never worked before to an open area that never had any roads, that doesn't have any paths. There's no like plowing roads or anything like that. We take it to an area where no one has ever been, and then we take, this is what the Kohanim do, they take an axe and they start hitting the egla, the female calf, outside of the marsh. They push it out of the marsh. And then they let the egla walk. Says Rabbeinu Bachaya, the egla would walk to the murderer's house. He would walk to the murderer's house, and they'd see that this is the murderer. They take that guy, and they'd punish him. They couldn't kill him, because they have no raya, they have nothing for it. But they would be able to say, that is the murderer. That's what the Rabbeinu Bachaya says. So it's not just Tom, you kill the egla. No, you hit the egla until it goes. And if it won't go, that means that Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want the murderer to be found. Then you kill the egla instead of that murderer. That becomes like a korban, where you're sacrificing an animal instead of that person. That's how the Rabbeinu Bachaya says it. That's the concept of what it is. That's awesome. I'm sorry? No, you couldn't use the land either. Couldn't use the land. And if the cow went, no, if the calf went, then for sure you could.
But if you're killing a cow in place of the murderer, then why wouldn't you let so much people eat?
No, because then you have the pasuk. Then the psukim apply. This applies over here. I'm sorry? I don't know. It's never mentioned in the Gemara whether or not they actually did it. It seems like they did, but it can't happen by Yerushalayim. There are certain things that are conditions over here. However, now we get into the crazy part. Yonasan ben Uziel and the Reikanti. Yonasan ben Uziel is the Targum. Yonasan ben Uziel on the side of the Chumash and the Mikras Gedolos. The Reikanti is a Rishon, an early Rishon. They both take it a step further. Immediately after the Eglo was killed, after this calf was killed, a ton of worms come from the stomach of the animal and go to the place. They crawl to the place where the murderer is. They climb upon the murderer and they drag him into Beis Din where they judge him. That's what those worms do. No, there are no questions on these types of trouble. Can't get those.
Protective cow.
Or
Baal Bondsman worms.
Yes, 100%. The regular worms. The Imre Shammai says they can't kill him there, but they throw him into a kippa. They give him barley until his stomach bursts. That's according to the Yonas and Muzil and the Reikanti. The Rabbeinu Bachaya says another shot, which he says, he heard, Shamati, says the Rabbeinu Bachaya, he heard, there's one big worm that goes out and kills the murderer wherever he is. From the koach of the Sar HaNachal, the angel of the Nachal, called Eson, in a wondrous way. So there's a huge worm that does it, not many worms that drag him to Beis Din. One worm goes and kills the guy, surrounds him, and whatever it is, becomes a horror movie, and just kills the guy. Now, there's a Medrash Agada on this week's Parsha that says that if they were Zocha, then before they killed the Egla, worms would go out, seemingly not from the cow. The worms would go out from the middle of the marsh. Worms would go out, I'm sorry, if B'nai Yisrael were Zocha, which is such a miracle. Then these worms would go out somewhere from the marsh, and they would go, and again, kill the murderer. So the Medrash Agada says it like the Rabbeinu Bachaya that it kills, but he says the worms are coming from a different place. The Panach Raza, who was an early Rishon, whose sefer was found when the Geniza of Rome, when they took over, when they were able to get some of the Sfarim from the Vatican, they found the Panach Raza. He says it a bit differently. Worms come out from the dead person's body. The one who is killed, worms come out from his body, they enter inside the murderer, and they kill him. So we've got three cases in which the worms kill him. Just, do they come from the cow? Do they come from the swamp? Or do they come from the murdered body? From the guy who was murdered itself. According to the Meir Seinayim, he combines a couple. The Meir Seinayim is a late Akron. He says that it's one worm that came from the egla after it starts to rot. It attaches itself to the clothing of the murderer. Nobody can pull it off. It sticks on to the clothing and stays there until Beis Din hears about it, and then they take that guy and they go ahead and kill him. If I was that murderer, I would probably change clothing. But maybe the worm just attaches itself to any clothing the guy's wearing. Maybe that's what ends up happening. That's the Meir Seinayim. That's unbelievable. Ready for this? What's that? There's a remez. The remez that they give for this is absolutely unbelievable. The Panach Raza doesn't just give you the remez of what it is. He explains why the remez is just so. He says the remez is the ata tevaer dam hanoki, and you should destroy the innocent blood among B'nai Yisrael. You should destroy that blood that was spilled innocently. You should try to take care of it in your way. The last letters of each word, the ata tevaer dam hanoki, is the sope tevis. Hey, Resh, Mem, Yud. That stands for Rima. That stands for a worm. And it's out of order. Because it only happens at the end. That's the Sophie Tavis. At the end, after you kill the cow, right before you're about to kill the cow. If you can't find the murderer, and you have to come to Egla Rufa, then what you're doing is something that's an Eruv, which is not the Seder HaOlam. It's not normal for such a thing to happen. God has to mix up the nature of the world in order to make it happen. So the letters are the Sophie Tavis, the end letters, and it's in a mixed up way to show you this type of a remez. That's what it's supposed to refer to. And that's what we're doing. We're changing around the Seder HaOlam in order to show that this guy's the one that murdered. Es Ha'egla, according to the Panach Raza, is also 514, which same gematria, Tola'a Ba, the worm comes. That's what it's supposed to be. That's, he gives a remez that it comes from the Egla, and he says, the reason why you have to add on the word Ba is unbelievable, no? He says, it should just be Tola'a. That should be the worm, right? So why do you have to add on the word Ba? Why do you need those extra three, Beis and Aleph, three, number three? Because it's the letter, three is the letter Gimel. This is his Gemul, his punishment. His gemul really means his repayment back for what he had done. The murderer did something and he thought that he could get away with it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him he will never get away with such a thing. That's the concept behind it. Why worms? Why worms over any other creature? There's a sefer called Sefer HaKavanos on Nun Chesamud Beis, it's a Kabbalah sefer, I saw it only quoted, said that every creature is created for some type of news, whether good or bad. Every creature in the world is supposed to tell over news in some way, shape, or form. Even worms. This is the situation where worms fulfill their tachlis of telling over what they're supposed to do. They show us who the murderer is in a very sick way. That's supposed to be their tachlis in life, and that's why worms were created, aside from tilling the soil and making it more, you know, better for everybody to live in. But this is the idea behind it. Yeah, they're all supposed to be for bodies themselves. Perhaps you can add on the following, that the Rotseach thought that no one was watching him. So what comes to get him? Worms that cannot see a thing and that are in the ground, that you don't think anybody's watching you, the worms that can't see anything at all, they're the ones who come to show you that someone is always watching you. They're the ones who come and do it. And that's the idea behind the Midah Keneged Midah, what's happening over here. But let's get into the process. The Shach says that it's specifically a female calf. A calf, why not a ram? Why not a lamb? Why not all these other types of things? Why does it have to be an egla? And why orphan? Why do you have to hit it on the back of the neck? Why Kohanim and Sanhedrin? What are you getting all of them involved? So he says, everyone has a schus to be saved from being murdered. Meaning, if somebody is coming up to you and somebody wants to murder you, naturally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts it somehow in the system where you will get out of it. The only way that a person ends up getting murdered, I'm saying this in a Klaliistic fashion, in very general terms. I'm not dealing with specific people. Don't say to me, well, what about that guy? I don't know. I'm saying in very general terms, according to the Shach, Sipsei Cohen, who's one of the Talmidei Arizal, he says that everyone should have that schus, unless the ego is very strong within him. If he did a chet that has shaychus to the ego azov, then you cannot be saved from a murder. He doesn't say why. He just says the egel azov is so strong that caused a person to be murdered. So that means that the chait of the egel azov, is so strong within you, we have to do something to knock down the egel. He says the main chait by the egel was their kashus orif, their stiff-necked. The fact that they were stiff-necked people, when Hur said to them, come on, Moshe Rabbeinu will be back in a couple hours. Just calm down. Don't worry about it. They said, no, Hur, we got to go find Moshe Rabbeinu, and they killed Hur. They went up to Aaron and said, we don't want to wait anymore. We want our own idol right now. They didn't want to wait. They're stiff-necked. Their stiff-neckedness, I guess you can call it that. The fact that they sat there and they said, we are not going to listen to anybody else. That's what caused them to lose everything because of the ego azov. So says the Shach, that's why we use an egla. We don't want to exactly replicate the ego. So we get an egla, female calf instead. And we get it on the back of the neck to show that the chait was the fact that they were kashis orif, that they had that hard neck. The Kohanim are representing the Bnei Levi. Remember, the Bnei Levi was when Moshe Rabbeinu called out, Mila Hashem Eli, who's going to fight with me against the ego azov? The Levium got up against them. So the Kohanim come along over here, and they're the ones, as well as Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin was there judging the people that did the ego azov, who should be killed by the Bnei Levi and who shouldn't be. So therefore, they're back now for this Kapara. That's the idea behind it. Why such a crazy thing? Like, what's going on with all this? What are you going to say, Dan?
I was going to say that the first murder in the world was a guy in Hevel, right? What's Hevel's shaykhus to the ego?
We're going to bring him in 1 second.
That's hold, the exact
yeah,
story.
Hold on 1 second. Hold on. It doesn't apply. It only applies by Bnei Yisrael. So that's one thing that you have on. It doesn't apply by non-Jewish. I don't know what the process is by somebody who's not Jewish. I have absolutely no idea. But hold on with Hevel for 1 second. I'm going to mention him in 1 second. Why is it so bad over here? Egla Rufa is surrounded by parshios about war. The parsha before this is who goes back from war. Who doesn't fight because they're afraid, or they just built a house, or they just got married, or they just built a vineyard, or whatever it is. Those guys go back from war. They don't fight. Right after this, we say Kiseitse L'Melcham Aloy Beth, at the beginning of Parshas Kiseitse. When you go out to war and you see a Yefas Tor, we're surrounding Egla Rufa by war. Says, I forgot who said this, I think this is Reb Moshe Feinstein, I think Reb Moshe says this, maybe you think killing isn't such a bad thing. I mean, come on, you know, you're going to war, and you got to kill people, so if you think killing is not so bad, here a Kadosh Baruch Hu shows us, and that even if one person is murdered, it's a huge thing. One person dying is a massive thing in Klal Yisrael, where Sanhedrin comes out, and the king comes out, and they say, oh, sorry, what happened to us? What's going on over here? Even one person dying is a massive, massive problem in Klal Yisrael, because the king didn't warn people enough not to kill other people. Sanhedrin didn't teach people enough how bad it is to valuing life enough, or not valuing life enough. Teaching people properly, they didn't teach people properly enough to not allow this to ever happen. They're blamed for it. And that's the concept behind it. And then you get into another level. This brings us to a different level. Yalkut Ruvaini quotes a sefer called the Magid. The Magid Meisharim was an angel that used to speak to Rabbi Yosef Kairo. Rabbi Yosef Kairo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. So everybody knows about Rabbi Yosef Kairo's normal Sfarim. You know, the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef on the tour, the Kesef Mishnah. He also wrote Kabbalah Sfarim, because he lived in Sfas. If you live in Sfas, you're at Sfasser. I mean, there's no choice. You gotta learn Kabbalah, or you're just thrown out. The Beis Yosef wrote a sefer called Magid Meisharim. The Magid Meisharim is a reference to what the Malach used to tell him in his dreams. He said the following: when a person is killed cruelly, his corpse is given over to the Sitra Achra, to the Sutton, because the Malach HaMavis is upset that he didn't get to do it himself, that somebody else got to kill him instead. And he's upset. So we kill an Egla harshly, in a harsh manner, so that the Sitra Achra removes itself from the dead person's body and transfers to this Egla, to this dead calf, to bring the nefesh of the dead person, the person who passed away, to the Sitra de Kedusha, to the side of Kedusha. Yadenu lo shafchu means he may have been Chayav Misa, this guy, and we should have killed him. We would have given him a Misa Yafa. But because he was killed by somebody else, unfortunately, this is what happened to him when he was brought over to Tumah. Now we have to do a process to remove that Tumah. He also brings that when a person is killed, the person's ruach, the person who was killed, his ruach wanders the land and cannot enter Shemayim because he said things in bitterness at the end of his life before he died. He said, God, why is this happening to me? Instead of saying, whatever God does is for the best, said, God, why is this happening to me? Because of that, his ruach cannot find a resting place in the world to come. And he runs throughout, this ruach goes throughout the whole world. And the klavim azei nefesh, these dogs that are known as spiritual dogs, chase after him wherever he goes. The remez is by Kayin, that Hevel at the end of his life said, what did I do to deserve this? And because of that it says, kol demei achicha, the voice of the blood of your brother, so achim elai min ha'adama. It's crying out to me from the ground. What do you mean from the ground? It should be calling out to me in Shemayim. Hevel's neshama would have been in Shemayim, right? The answer is no. His neshama couldn't go up there. His ruach was stuck on the earth, stuck on the Adam, and couldn't go up because he had said the wrong words. So because of that, it couldn't go up to Shemayim, and that's the remez for us as well. And it doesn't go up. It doesn't go up into Shemayim until the rotzeach is killed. The murderer is killed. So until Cain was killed 7 generations later, Hevel's neshama could not make it up to Shemayim. That's one of the reasons why there's such a thing as a goel hadam, a redeemer of blood, that when a person kills accidentally and a person jumps, you know, falls on a guy, there's a goel adam, a guy who goes to try to kill the murderer. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows it happened b'shogeg. So because of that, you don't know what happened to the guy when he was dying at the last second. We don't know. So we don't want to go ahead and just kill the murderer who just did it accidentally. We say, go to a near miklat, escape from it, and we'll get rid of it. But that's the purpose of the goel adam, and why you can't have mercy on a rotzeach, on a murderer. If a guy actually murdered somebody, get rid of him, because otherwise the Neharaj is a ruach that's going throughout the earth. He becomes a kateger, an accuser on Klal Yisrael for allowing such a murder to happen among Bnei Yisrael, for such a thing to happen, Chas V'Shalom, and that's the reason why I have to get rid of it. Such an unbelievable idea. We'll end with this. The Abir Yaakov, 2 Abir Yaakovs, 2 weeks in a row. You don't get too much better. Rav Yaakov B'Chatzera, there is nothing better than the Bava Tzali's grandfather. He said it's all a remez. This whole parsha is just a remez to another type of shlichus, another type of murder. He calls it Shechva Zera Levatala, wasting seed. He says this whole parsha is about that. He says the following. He says, everyone knows, of course, everyone knows this. If there's too much Shechva Zera Levatala in the world, that causes actual murder to be caused in the world. So more of Shazal causes actual murder to happen. So therefore, Yadenu Lo Shafku, our hands did not spill, is literally a remez that our hands did not do the proper thing. That's the idea. Einenu lo ra'u, our eyes did not see, is a remez that they saw improper things. That from now on we're going to work on that. And not looking at improper things, our hands should not be involved in such terrible things. And from now on we should have a kapara for the dam that we spilled, for the dam that we spilled, those the children that have been lost, so that no longer will there be actual murder on the earth. That's the concept of what we're trying to do with Egla Rufa, just a tremendous remez. He says a lot more, but that's just the gist of what he said. In summary, the power of the stars on the nations of the world, the machlokas Rambam and Ramban, which applies in this week's Parsha, and Pasuk Gimel and Perek Yud Zayin, the Egla Rufa and the worm process, and these worms come out of nowhere to go kill the guy, as well as why an eagle? for the chet of the Egel Azov and how harsh murder is and what happens to the one who was murdered, as well as the remez to Shechvat Galut HaTov. Have a good Shabbos.